The Senate will please come to order. Clerk will please call the roll.
Atkinson, Bates, Bonamici, Boquist, Burdick, Carter, Devlin, Dingfelder, Ferrioli, George, Girard, Haas, Johnson, Cruz, Metzger, Montes-Anderson, Monroe, Morissette, Morse, Nelson, Przonski, Rosenbaum, Schrader, Starr, Telfer, Verger, Walker, Whitsett, Winters, President Courtney.
A quorum is present. We will post the colors, and Senator Chris Telfer will lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance. Our invocation today is from Mary Shebist, and she is from Lewis and Clark College.
Thank you. I'm honored to be here this morning. This is a poem about being at a dinner party shortly after the death of a friend, and we were eating whole grilled fish, and there was a little girl at the party who liked eating the eyes out of those fish. And this is on wanting to tell about a girl eating fish eyes. How her loose curls float above each silver fish as she leans in to pluck its eyes. You died just hours ago. Not suddenly, no. You'd been dying so long nothing looked like itself. From your window, fishermen swirled sequins. Fishnets entangled the moon. Now the dark rain looks like dark rain. Only the wine shimmers with candlelight. I refill the glasses as we raise a toast to you, as so-and-so's daughter, elfin, jittery as a sparrow, slides into another lap to eat another pair of slippery eyes with her soft fingers, fingers rosier each time for being chewed a little. If only I could go to you, revive you. You must be a little alive still. I'd like to put this girl in your lap. She's almost feverishly warm, and she weighs hardly anything. I want to show you how she relishes each eye, to show you her greed for them. She is placing one on her tongue, bright as a polished coin. What do they taste like? I ask. Twisting in my lap, she leans back sleepily. They taste like eyes, she says.
Thank you, Senator Mary. Excuse me. Thank you, Senator Chris Telfer, for leading us in the pledge. And thank you, Mary Shebist, for coming here today. We'd like to extend the courtesies of the Senate to you. Under courtesies, my fellow senators, this is the of our floor staff, those who are listening. Today is the last day that Jesse Markowitz's will be here as a doorkeeper and a page with us. He has put in approximately 250 hours as a member of the force staff, as an intern in an effort to broaden this understanding of the Oregon political process. He has just completed his final term at Portland State University, working on as a history major. Jesse was born in Portland, and he was raised in Oregon City. He is married to Karen Jeffrey, who served as the Sergeant of Arms during the 2005 session. I want to thank Jesse for your service to the Senate, and we wish you the best of luck in the future. You've allowed us to helpfully get through our days here, and we hope that you've found it a positive experience, an educational experience, as you've helped the legislative session, and in particular the Oregon State Senate at this time. I now recognize Senator Jason Atkinson under courtesies. He does not wish to take a courtesy. Recognize Senator Vicki Walker under courtesies.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would like to extend courtesies today to Sarah Leslie and her family. I know Sarah's up there. Yes, I see her. She is a recent graduate of Sprague High School, Mr. President, and she's off to the great state of Minnesota to attend college at Bethel University to study international relations. My daughter has a master's in international relations. It makes you a very well-rounded individual. But Sarah's here with her friend from Texas and her family who lives here, and she's here to watch us vote on a bill that she worked on this session, and I'll talk about that a little bit later, Mr. President. So thank you for welcoming her here today.
Sarah and your family, thanks for coming to the session today, and thanks for your working with Senator Walker in this session. Wish you well and Bethel, and congratulations on your graduation from Sprague High School. It's an honor and a privilege to have you and your family here today. Are there any further courtesies? We're now on our remonstrances. Message from the House.
Mr. President, Majority Speaker Mponia has this passed. House Bills 3405, 2649, 2600, 3495, 3496, Senate Bills 428, 580, 608. Passed the following Senate Bills amended by the House. Senate Bill 640, 578, 871, 944, concurrence amendments repassed. House Bills 2188, 2191, 2238, 2246, 2292, 2507, 2553, 2623, 2874, 2893, 3077, 2759, 2221. Refused concurrence amendments on House Bills 2175, a conference committee was appointed. Mr. President, Mr. Mponia has passed. Senate Bill 106, 135, 533, 539, 571, 622, 631, 775, SCR 7, 8, 10, and 11. And the Speaker has signed Senate Bill 409.
Without objection, we will proceed to the first reading of House measures.
House Bill 2600, the Kansas Lodgement for Persons with Disabilities. House Bill 2649, with taxation prescribing effective date. House Bill 3405, with state finance appropriate money prescribing effective date and providing for revenue raising requires approval by a 3/5 majority. House Bill 3495, the Law Enforcement Conduct Policy and Data Review Committee. House Bill 3496, with health insurance.
House Bill 2649 and House Bill 3405 referred to the Ways and Means Committee. The remaining bills will be transferred to the President's desk for referral. We will now resume under the regular order of business. Reports from the conference committees, reports from standing committees, in accordance with SR 8.551, committee report summary number 119, was distributed to members today. This information will be recorded in the Journal of State Report, so ordered. Reports from special committees, proposition and motions, recognize Senator Richard Devlin.
Thank you, Mr. President, Senate colleagues. I move the consideration of HCR 6 be made a special order of business immediately.
Senator Devlin has moved that the consideration of HCR 6 be made a special order of business immediately. To your motion, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. I think all the members here on the floor would like to do this resolution as soon as possible.
Discussion. The question is making SCR 6 a special order of business immediately? Those in favor will say aye. Aye. And those opposed, no. This motion is carried. Recognize Senator Floyd Pazansky.
Thank you, Mr. President. I request unanimous consent to suspend the rules and allow President Dave Frommeyer from the University of Oregon onto the Senate floor.
Senator Floyd Pazansky has requested unanimous consent to suspend the rules and allow the President of the University of Oregon, Dave Frommeyer, onto the Senate floor. Is there any objections to this? There are no objections. It is so ordered. We will now proceed to the special order of business. The clerk will read the resolution, please.
House Concurrent Resolution 6, congratulating Dave Frommeyer for his leadership, public service, and accomplishments.
We will now recognize Senator Floyd Pazansky.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, it's my honor and privilege to bring to the floor of the Senate House Concurrent Resolution 6. House Concurrent Resolution 6 will congratulate President Dave Frommeyer for his leadership, public service, and accomplishments, not only as the president of the university, but for over 30 years of service that he's provided to the state of Oregon in multiple capacities. For those who have not had the opportunity to follow Dave's careers as public servant in the state of Oregon, it started off and most notably here in the legislature and the assembly, as a representative. He's also served as the Attorney General. He's also served as the Dean of the University of Oregon's Law School before he was asked and was accepted to become the President of the University of Oregon. He has served on countless boards and commissions throughout these years, and I expect that he will continue to do so, knowing that his blood is true to public service for the state of Oregon. It should be noted that when Dave was the Attorney General, that he did in fact have the opportunity to argue 7 different cases before the Supreme Court, 6 of those cases that he won, and that's the best record for any individual state attorney before the U.S. Supreme Court. As I mentioned before, Dave has long roots here in the state. As all of us realize, he is the first native Oregonian to be in the service of in the capacity of a large research university in this state. And he's also has helped the University of Oregon through these processes of unparalleled growth of the university and getting the university much more transformed into a real, live, big research institution that all of us throughout the state can be proud on. Now, I understand when it comes down to Civil War Day that we may have a little differences of the colors that we wear, and that's okay because that's what the spirit of competitiveness is. But when it comes down to every day that we are here in the state, we honor and support all of our universities in this state. And no doubt, I know that President Fermar has done so in his capacity as it pertains to the other universities within the state. It's my privilege and honor, again, Mr. President, to bring this resolution before the body, and I hope that we will, in fact, give unanimous consent in showing and demonstrating to Dave all of the hard work and efforts that he has given back to the state over the years that he has provided service to the different components of state government as well as to the University of Oregon. Thank you, Mr. President.
There is now discussion. I recognize Senator Jeff Cruz, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. Colleagues, I've known Dave for a long time, and he truly is one of the more notable Oregonians I've ever met. But I just kind of wanted to point to some of the little things he did as president that didn't get a lot of notice. He actually conducted a leadership class at the University of Oregon. And we'd have a select group of students, and I think gave them an extraordinary opportunity. My stepdaughter had the rare privilege of being a member of his class last year, and she said it's the best class she has ever had, bar none. And so you know of all of the big things he does and all of that, but, you know, I think the merit of the man is the fact that he pays attention to detail and makes personal connections with the students. And he's going to be sorely missed. So, Dave, good luck in your next endeavor. I'm sure you will continue to give honor to the state of Oregon.
Thank you. Now I recognize Senator Jackie Winters, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I've known Dave for a lot of years when he was in the House, and I knew him as the Attorney General. And one of the precious moments for me was the rare, he's probably forgotten, one of the rare opportunities that I had to have a serious discussion on television with respect to whether or not it was enacting legislation and the lack of clear and concise language that created the problem with all the rulemaking, or whether it was the bureaucracy and its interpretation that was really the culprit. And I worked with his lovely wife in Children's Services Division, and he has done tremendous amount of service for this great state of ours. And I'm honored to stand here to say, talk not only about his contribution, for being a great friend.
Thank you. Recognize Senator Jason Atkinson, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I was joking with President Fronmeyer earlier in the hallway about one of my favorite quotes from Harry Truman that says, "A statesman is what you call a politician after he's safely dead." But in this particular instance, certainly President Fronmeyer is very alive and is certainly a role model of statesmanship. not only for his service in the legislature and his service in the building, but also his service and continued public service all the way through his career. I first got to know President Frohnmayer through his father, actually. It was a time in which he was running for another office that my family got involved in politics in his support. And our families became more connected through what families are connected through than politics. And throughout my time in public service and interest in the Floyds and some other things in teaching and in higher education, I've always looked to President Frohnmayer as a role model, I think, not only for me, but also for that connection of having your family first and having public service a very strong second. So I'm delighted to stand and to recognize an impact that you have had on my life, have even from just being in your shadow. But thank you for all that you've done, and it's glad to have a statesman who is very much alive.
Thank you. Recognize Senator Bill Morsett, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. The University, part of the University of Oregon Law School, for instance, is in my Senate district. I have known Dave for a number of years. I think I asked him one time why he didn't run as a Democrat, and he looked at me and said, "Why? You vote for me anyway, don't you?" And I said, "Yeah, I always vote for you." So, he did argue a number of cases before the Supreme Court, six, I believe, and he won them. I had a difference of opinion on one of them that we discussed at different times. But I think he's an absolutely wonderful person who does give back to the community and is dedicated to teaching, and he will be teaching classes when he retires. And so I think that is great. So congratulations, Dave, on your retirement.
Thank you. Recognize Senator Betsy Johnson, please.
Thank you very much. Would that all public servants were cast in the model of Dave Frohnmayer. A citizen servant, an elegant writer and speaker, the epitome of public service in a variety of roles, a family friend, a great Oregonian. I am honored to join in this well-deserved public recognition of a terrific Oregonian.
Thank you. Recognize Senator Rob Monroe.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. I have known Dave Frohnmayer since we were both young men in the House of Representatives in 1977, and I have great respect for him and his career, great respect for him as an educator, and all of the work that he's done there. But I still regret that in 1990 he was not elected our governor, because he would have been an outstanding governor. And I'm still getting in trouble sometimes with folks in my party for having endorsed him in that run for governor. If the other party hadn't split their vote, he would have been governor, and this state would have been better off because of it. Thank you, and I'm happy to support this resolution.
Thank you. I'll now recognize Senator Vicki Walker, please.
Oh, thank you, Mr. President. I'm delighted to see this resolution come to the floor today. I was a undergraduate at the U of O from 1974 to 1978 and worked at the U of O Law School. And that's where I first met Dave Frohnmayer. He was a teacher, a professor there. And I was doing work study at the law school because I was going to go to law school and be a lawyer. Well, I became a court reporter instead, which actually seemed to be a lot more fun. And I have known Dave ever since. What has been said today has been honorable about this man who's given 30 years of public service to Oregon and to my alma mater, the University of Oregon. He's raised over $1 billion for the U of O. Dave, could I hire you as a fundraiser for my next event? And most recently, well over $800 million to wrap up some work we needed to do. I can't tell you how many new buildings have been put on campus, renovated buildings that are old. I remember going to D.D. Hall. I had classes there in my freshman year, and that was not accessible to people who had disabilities because it was stairs all the way up. That building has been renovated. We have a new music school, a new education building. It's an old university, and we don't build just to build. We build because we have more students. We've had record enrollment, I think over 5,000 new students. It's incredible how many students come to the U of O. They, of course, come for our academic prowess. You know, they love to see us beat the Beavers, but they also come because we have incredible academics, just outstanding academics. I remember when my children wanted to go to the university, they wanted to go to a university, and my daughter was adamant it was not going to the U of O because they'd grown up in Eugene. Why would I want to go to the U of O? Well, they did a little research and found out that our university was really quite astounding. And had received record accomplishments. So both my children spent their undergraduate years at the U of O. Adam went back, just got his master's in teaching. He's a first-year teacher who will be laid off partly from his job because of budget cuts. He now will go to half-time. But my daughter pursued her master's degree elsewhere, but this university is phenomenal what they have been doing. And Dave not only has contributed to the university in the state of Oregon, but to all sorts of community endeavors. Him and his wife, Lynn, are just incredible contributors to our community. Their son lives in my district. He's my constituent, Mark is. Always got things to talk about because he has generated this thirst and this lust for knowledge with not only his own children, but with the children of Oregon. So I'm proud to stand here and honor such a fine public servant for Oregon. Thank you, Dave Frohnmayer, Mr. President, for all of your work for Oregon. And I know students are going to be happy that you're going to still be teaching. Thank you.
Thank you. Now I recognize Senator Jenny Burdick, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. I rise in support of this resolution. I've known President Frohnmayer for many, many years. I first met him in the 1973 session when I was working on my graduate journalism project studying the ways of the lobby at the University of Oregon. And Dave Frohnmayer was a lobbyist for Common Cause, and that was the session that the legislature passed the lobby disclosure laws, and I believe the public records law. It was quite a wonderful session for transparency, and he was right in the center of it. And then the following session, he got elected to the state house. I covered that session for the Associated Press and was always amazed at the thoroughness and the preparedness of all his floor statements. He was one of those people who, when he stood up to make a floor statement, everyone turned around and paid attention. And then fast forward, in my private business, I did some work at one point for the Portland, for the Oregon Historical Society in Portland. And I remember driving around in a van with people, with board members of the Historical Society, including Stafford Hansel and the good senator from Scappoose's mother, Becky Johnson. It was one of the highlights of my life. And we went around the state doing interviews on what the mission of the Historical Society should be. So one of our interviews was with President Frohnmayer, who then, I believe, was dean of the law school at the University of Oregon. And about a week later, we get in the mail a 10-page document from President Frohnmayer, who has done research, has done thinking, and basically presented a memo that was so well thought out on what the mission of the Oregon Historical Society should be. We could have just picked that up and adopted it. So it's not often in government and public life that we get someone as well-rounded with the intellectual skills, the intellectual firepower, and the public service ethic that President Frohnmayer has. He will be very greatly missed in his retirement, but he certainly deserves a happy and healthy retirement. So I wish him the best.
Thank you. Now I recognize Senator Dianne Rosenbaum, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. And I just want to briefly add my own note of appreciation to President Frohnmayer, who actually hired my husband almost 20 years ago now at the Department of Justice. And I think because he personally interviewed every person that was hired there during that time, he really launched the careers of hundreds of people who've gone on to public service. And particularly, I know my husband remembers that he valued diversity of background and opinion. And I personally particularly remember after last session getting a note of thanks over a bill that I had not even agreed with him on. So I think in that spirit, he has always been gracious and really embodies the very best of public service, and our state has been very lucky and will continue to be to have him in public service. Thank you.
Thank you. I'd now like to recognize Senator Margaret Carter.
Good morning, Mr. President, and it is now on. Because you have said that you're congratulating this man for his 30 years of leadership, his public service, all of his wonderful accomplishments, but Dave can't jump, I should tell you that. He can't jump very high at all, even though he's tall and you think of him as being able to play basketball. But one thing he can do is that he can sing. And so we were up singing this song, Amazing Grace, with this lovely tenor voice, and all of a sudden he was just being very Dave and being very controlled like he is and singing. And all of a sudden we're singing down at the big banquet in Portland. And then here comes this black woman with this great big voice singing another verse of Amazing Grace. Look like Dave saying, what's up with that? This big voice. But he can be funny as well. And he's a great father. His daughters would come and report to the legislature, and Dave would be right there as a proud father sitting in the back. And he's a wonderful man doing all these great things, but everybody thinks of him as being so serious, and he is, but there is that witty, funny side of Dave that I've experienced, and I want to congratulate him on his 30 years of service, but wanted to bring just a little light side to you guys to know that as much of a scholar that he is, as much of a great fundraiser that he is, as great of a dad that he is, and as wonderful of a legislator and an attorney general and now president he can be, there is that funny, witty Dave that I just love. Hats off. Congratulations.
Thank you. Are there others that wish to speak on this resolution? Would the good Senator Frank Morris like to speak on this resolution? That wasn't fair. The light wasn't on, but I just thought maybe I'd do that to see if, you know, I just thought I'd do it. But I know he's praying for you, President Frohnmayer. I know that because he's a prayer, so he's doing that for you. So, anyone else wishes to speak on the resolution? With the good Senator, before he presents, he'd like to close on the resolution.
Thank you, Mr. President. I just want to leave with some of the facts and statements that we've heard today. It's very important to me when you measure an individual as to what they're willing to give back to their communities. Dave Frohnmayer has given many, many years, many efforts, many hours of time. And one of the things that's really important is you would think through this perspective of Dave being in charge of one of the leading research institutions in this country, that he makes time. He's never lost his priority to teach. He's been a teacher, a professor, and making certain that young people have the opportunity to get, let's say, the insight, the foresight from someone who's been able to walk the shoes that he has been in. And to me, that's a point of being an elder, an individual that is willing to share and give back, not only to a larger organization, but to the individuals. And we've heard stories today as how that's played. And it's really great to know and not to be unexpected that he's not going to hang up his efforts in that area, that he will in fact continue to teach, to be a mentor to many that will come after his retirement there at the university and throughout this state. So it's my honor and my privilege to take a moment to reflect on an individual who served in the seat that I first had the opportunity to serve in and when I was first elected in 1994, someone that I looked at as a mentor, that is someone that actually has shown and demonstrated that you can, in fact, maintain your principles and serve well and have an opportunity to give back. And he is a great Oregonian, and he's an individual that I hope that we will, in fact, honor today in giving an affirmative vote. And all I can say at this point, Mr. President, is go Dave, go Ducks.
Thank you very much. The question now arises upon the third reading and the final passage of H.C.R. 6. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will say aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will please call the roll.
Monroe.
Aye.
Morissette.
Aye.
Morse.
Aye.
Nelson.
Aye.
Przonski.
Aye.
Rosenbaum.
Aye.
Schrader.
Aye.
Starr.
Aye.
Telfer.
Aye.
Berger.
Aye.
Walker.
Aye.
Whitsett.
Aye.
Winters. Atkinson, Bates, Bonamici, Boquist, Burdick, Carter, Devlin, Dingfelder, Ferrioli, George, Gerard, Haas, Johnson, Cruz, Metzger, Montes Anderson, President Courtney.
Yes.
Absent, Boquist, 29 ayes.
H.C.R. 6, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Mr. President, on this day and time, the Oregon State Senate has given you its highest recognition. When I learned that you were retiring, I referred to you as a juggernaut. You presided over the University of Oregon as its president for 15 years. Prior to that, you were the dean of the law school. You were our attorney general for 10 years, and you also served in the House of Representatives. You have been educated at the finest schools, not only in this country, but in the world, Harvard, Oxford, and UC Berkeley. Bachelor's degrees at Harvard, master's degrees at Oxford as a Rhodes Scholar, and then your law degree from the University of California at Berkeley. In all capacities, your performance has been extraordinary. As an elected official, as an administrator, as a professor, and as a human being. The last thing I want to say to you is that as you move to the next part of your life, I want you to know that I want you personally, as a presiding officer, and I know the senators will join me in this, I want you and your wife, Lynn, your children, Mark, Jonathan, and Amy, to know peace and happiness. You deserve that. And I want you to also know that your daughters, Katie and Kirsten, who you lost to Fanconi Anemia disease, will always be in our thoughts and our prayers. You and Lynn have carried that cross for many years. As a parent, as a public official, I am so proud that this Senate has chosen this day and time to honor you and your family and your great career. And it also is an extraordinary honor that you would come here today. And I would like to ask all my senators to stand and give a standing ovation to David Frohmeyer. Recognize Senator Richard Devlin.
Thank you, Mr. President, Senate colleagues. I move that consideration of House Bill 2834 be taken from its place on today's calendar to be made a special order of business at 10:45.
Senator Devlin has moved that the consideration of House Bill 2834 be taken from its place on today's calendar and be made a special order of business at 10:45. To your motion.
Thank you, Mr. President. That is the time when we believe that it would be best to consider that piece of legislation.
There's no further discussion. The question is on taking House Bill 2834 from today's calendar and making it a special order of business at 10:45. All those in favor will please say aye. Aye. And those opposed, no. This motion is carried. Recognize Senator Devlin.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senate colleagues, I move that consideration of SCR 16 be taken from its place on today's calendar and be made a special order of business at 11:15.
Senator Richard Devitt has moved the consideration of SCR 16 be taken from its place on today's calendar and made a special order of business at 11:15. To your motion.
Thank you, Mr. President. Some of the parties that are going to be honored by this resolution are going to be here today at that time.
All in favor of the motion of taking SCR 16 from today's calendar and making a special order of business at 11:15 will please say aye.
Aye.
And those opposed, no. No. The motion has carried. We will now, I guess, go into recognize Senator Burdick, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. Request a return to courtesies.
Without objection, please feel free to do so.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have a new intern here today, David Davidson. He is from Bellingham, Washington, and he is a student at Willamette University, class of 2010. He is an English-Spanish double major and an avid cyclist. He rides a Trek carbon fiber bike. And he's on the Willamette cycling team.
Thank you. It's an honor and privilege to have you here. And I wish I could cycle. And so I would like to extend the courtesy of the Senate to you. Thanks for being with Senator Burdick on this day. We'll now turn the regular order of business. Recognize Senator Devlin. Recognize Senator Devlin, please. I believe we're going to recess for caucuses. Is that the signal?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. President. Senate colleagues, Senate Democrats request a 15-minute caucus.
And now I recognize Senator Ted Ferrioli, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senate Republicans also request a 15-minute caucus.
Thank you. The Senate will be in recess until 10:45.
Senate will please come to order. Clerk will please call the roll.
Atkinson, Bates, Bonamici, Boquist, Burdick, Carter, Devlin, Dingfelder, Ferrioli, George, Girard, Haas, Johnson, Cruz, Metzger, Wons Anderson, Monroe, Morissette, Morse, Nelson, Brzezinski, Rosenbaum, Schrader, Starr, Telfer, Verger, Walker, Whitsett, Winters, President Courtney.
He's here. Okay. The quorum is present. Senate recessed under the order of propositions and motions and will proceed to the special order of business, and it is so ordered. Would the clerk please read the bill?
House Bill 2834, an Oregon School for the Blind, Property Money, and Current Emergency.
I would like to just read for the record that this is a difficult issue we're going to be discussing. And by Senate rule, when the Senate is in daily session or in a hearing is being conducted, no one in our chamber, gallery, or hearing room shall act in a manner disruptive of the proceedings. Please do not try to communicate with anyone on the Senate floor during the floor sessions. Please do not react to the debate on the floor in any demonstrative way of approving or disapproving of a senator's speech. And I would ask that when the vote is finally taken, that no demonstrations would take place, either approving or disapproving of it. As I say, it's a difficult issue. I ask that all of us be respectful in our discussions and debate, and all that are here today to observe the discussion and debate also be respected. Thank you for allowing me to make that statement at this time as we proceed to take up House Bill 2834. I will now recognize Senator Rod Monroe.
Thank you, Mr. President. House Bill 2834 comes to you from the Committee on Ways and Means. It passed out of the subcommittee on education on a unanimous vote, and on out of the full Ways and Means Committee with two no votes. House Bill 2834 directs the closure of the Oregon School for the Blind before next September. Comprehensive transition plans will be developed for each student enrolled in the school as of March 1 who is expected to enroll in the 2009-2010 school year. That's about 24 individuals. The Blind and Visually Impaired Student Fund will be established by this bill, and monies will be appropriated to the fund, and they shall be used to assist students who are blind or visually impaired, coordinate professional development and technical assistance. The bill further directs the sale of the property of the Oregon School for the Blind, with the net proceeds being deposited into the Education Stabilization Fund. Financially, the bill includes $2.85 million general fund for the purpose of appropriating to the emergency board to cover the cost of student transition. There will be sufficient dollars to follow every student. In fact, one of the students is 10 years old, and those dollars will be there to follow that student until she's 21. So this will cover the cost of closure, the cost of staffing, maintenance, and the sale of the property. The staff at the School for the Blind will be given preferential treatment in finding other appropriate jobs. When there are jobs that are open, they will be given preference. There's a $2.96 million general fund appropriated to the Department of Education to be deposited in the Blind and Visually Impaired Student Fund, which will be used to aid blind or visually impaired students all over the state of Oregon. The Joint Ways and Means Committee recommends approval of House Bill 2834 as amended, and I'd like to say a little bit about the history. This school is over 130 years old. It was created back in the 19th century when institutionalization was the common practice for dealing with people that were different or people that had any kind of an unusual malady, like blindness or deafness or whatever. You sent them away to institutions. So there were over 100 students in this facility for many years. Then in the mid-1970s, the federal government passed Public Law 94-142, which said that for special needs students, they shall be educated in the least restrictive way. This is sometimes called mainstreaming. And this federal law basically said if students who have any kind of special need can appropriately be mainstreamed with regular students, that's the best way to treat them, because they're going to live in a society that has all kinds of folks in it, including a lot of us that can see and hear and so on. From that time on, the population in the Oregon School for the Blind has declined to its present day 31, and if it were to stay open next year, it would be down to 24. Some of these people are young adults now, we have made sure in this bill that there will be sufficient money for the school district or the ESD or wherever they end up to make sure that if they need Braille equipment, if they need any other facilities, if they need special teachers, special assistants to work with them, any of those kinds of needs will be met, and there will be sufficient money to meet those kinds of needs. Currently, the Oregon School for the Blind does provide other school districts and ESDs with assistance to help with blind students that are not in the Oregon School for the Blind. That's what the $3 million fund is for. If we had kept the school open for another biennia, the cost would have been over $6.5 million. Because of the declining enrollment, the current cost of those people in the Oregon School for the Blind is more than $140,000 each per year, not per biennium, per year. This is the right thing to do. It's a difficult decision. It's a painful decision. The fact that it came through my committee unanimously tells you that those people that heard all of the evidence and all the testimony believe that this is the correct decision to make. I know that some on this floor don't agree with this decision, but please, in the calmness of our deliberation, I hope that we can continue, go forward, and make the right call. I urge your aye vote.
I recognize Senator Fred Girard. Do you wish to speak now, or do you wish to close?
I wish to close, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Senator Fred Girard. I now recognize Senator Vicki Walker, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. I can be calm. I just don't have to accept the outcome. I have questions of the carrier, please. Questions of the carrier.
Would the carrier please respond to our carrier?
I'll be happy to respond to Senator Walker's questions.
Thank you. Senator, could you please speak to the services that are allegedly being provided to the students in this bill? Specifically, the word substantially equivalent. And would you please elaborate on what that means compared to the services they are receiving now at the Oregon School for the Blind as to what they will receive in their local districts?
Thank you. I'm happy to respond. First of all, the Oregon School for the Blind lost its certification as an educational institution more than a decade ago. I would anticipate as these students are transferred to local school districts' responsibility, they will not only receive services appropriate for their visually impaired condition, but they'll also have a certified academic program, which they do not currently have. They will each have an IEP, which will be formed. Individual educational plan will be created, and that individual educational plan will call for meeting all of their needs, their ability to function in a sighted society, their ability to deal with whatever kind of program they're placed into. If in fact the decision is made in their IEP that they should be served in another institution, there is an institution available in Vancouver, Washington, and some of them might in fact be placed there. We mean what we say. The dollars will be there to provide not only a substantially equivalent program in terms of their blindness, but also a much better program to meet their academic needs.
Thank you. Further question of the carrier, please.
Would the carrier respond to the question? The carrier will.
Senator, I understand there will be services available and there's a fund created for districts. Is there a regional program being established? And if so, under the auspices of whom?
The Department of Education will designate a regional program, probably the Willamette ESD, but because it's where most of the students are from. And that regional program will oversee the transition of all of these students to their back home to their local school district.
Follow-up question, Mr. President?
Will the carrier yield to a question? The carrier will yield.
I shudder about the last comment that it would be Willamette ESD, but let me ask you, what is the accountability for the regional program? What redress do parents have if A, they are not receiving the services that they expect to receive at the local level, or B, they don't receive the services through the regional program?
Well, their redress would be two. Their redress would be first through the Department of Education and the superintendent's office, or, of course, through the courts.
Okay. And my final question, Mr. President?
Would the carrier yield, please? The carrier will yield.
Thank you. Senator, you've been very patient, and I appreciate it, but I'm trying to make a record here for people who really care about the school. And I'm not saying you don't all care about it. What I'm saying is there are people here who disagree with what we're doing. So let me ask you this question. There is a letter on your desk that I have provided for you from Bill Failing, who is an attorney in Portland. Well, actually, he's the great-great-grandnephew of Henry Failing, who Henry Failing has no direct descendants in Oregon, and he has represented the interests along with other descendants of the Failing family. And they are the ones who held the deed to the property. He insists that several years ago, he and his heirs agreed to provide clear title to the state as long as the property stayed dedicated for educational purposes. And he believes that applies to the current status of the Oregon School for the Blind, that Henry Failing made this property gift based on his helping the handicapped. Could you please address this problem that we are concerned about whether this deed will allow for the sale of the property to whomever and foreclosure of the School for the Blind.
Thank you. And we have discussed that issue and sought legal opinion both from Legislative Council and from the Attorney General's Office, both of whom tell us that we have the authority to sell the property. But also...
Would someone yield their time, please? Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Donna Rosenbaum.
Also, in the drafting of the bill, you will note that all proceeds from the sale go to the Educational Stability Fund, which will be, in fact, used for education.
Thank you, Mr. President. To the bill.
To the bill, please.
Thank you. I appreciate the good senator from Mid-Multnomah County answering my questions. He knows how impassioned I feel about the subject. And it's not to say that none of you are. I envision this as much like the debate that was held when you closed Fairview and sent those people home into their districts. It was a difficult discussion, I'm sure. But the School for the Blind is there to serve our students who are visually impaired, blind, and have multiple disabilities. Last session, I worked so hard to get a bill passed that you all supported, allowing for us to establish boards of directors at the School for the Blind and the School for the Deaf. And the primary reason for that is because these schools were being ignored. They were being ignored by the legislature, but most importantly, they were being ignored by the Department of Education. Let me give you a little history. The School for the Blind was established in 1873. There was a Board of Education comprised of the Governor, the Secretary of State, and the Superintendent of Public Instruction. In 1893, there was a Board of Trustees, the Governor, Secretary of State, and Superintendent of Public Instruction, just a renaming. From 1913 to 1969, it was called the Board of Control, the Governor, Secretary of State, and the State Treasurer. Something happened to the Superintendent of Public Instruction. Disappeared. 1969 to 71, Special Schools Division Board of Control. 1971 to present, State Board of Education. The Oregon School for the Blind was established in 1873 by an act of this Legislative Assembly, right here. Not you folks, but right here in this building. The school was opened in order to provide an education and establish programs ensuring independence for students who are blind. It was first opened on February 26, 1873, and located at the Salem home of William Nesbitt. The school's first teacher, Miss Nellie Simpson, began the program with two students, but before the end of the term, five students were enrolled. Well, now that was 1873. That's a long time ago. But by 1874, a new superintendent and a new school, now at 13th Street between Court and Chemeketa, was established. 10 years later, or in 1883, the school moved to a location on 12th Street. And the building later became the home of Salem's first hospital. Finally, in 1895, the school relocated to its present 7-acre campus on 700 Church Street Southeast in Salem. It is a highly coveted piece of property. There is an underlying issue here that this is a highly coveted piece of property. There is a fast-growing hospital nearby. There are other services nearby. This has been a wonderful campus to educate these children. However, because of the neglect, the building is in disrepair, and I've been there and I've seen it. I even asked for stimulus funds to help renovate this building. But I'm afraid we're just a little too late here because we have so far neglected this program and allowed it to become unaccredited, disaccredited, however you want to say that. And now we're willing to ship children off to Vancouver, Washington, because, folks, I don't think they're going to get the services they need in their local districts. There are services here provided by the school that are phenomenal for these children. They do thrive. They do succeed. And the board of directors passed a resolution opposing the sale of the school because the board came up with a master plan. They went all this work to set up a master plan about their school, but time has run out. I will tell you that one of the representatives in our other chamber received a legislative council opinion about this deed, and I will tell you there are issues surrounding the deed. Not all of the heirs signed the quitclaim deed. And Mr. Bill Failing, according to his letter, is going to be very proactive at asserting his right to have this property used for the services it was designated for. There could very well be extended lawsuits, and there could very well be lots of legal battles as we determine the fate of this school. As to what will happen to the families whose children are not well served, well, here's the answer we got back from Legislative Council. The first opportunity they have to object would be to tell the superintendent, make a complaint to the superintendent of public instruction and say their school district is in non-compliance, and then state funds would be held withheld from the school. Well, that's not going to happen because a lot of our school districts are in non-compliance because they had to cut school days. So that won't happen. The other one they could do is file a writ of mandamus in a court directing a public body to perform an act the public body is required to perform by law. Okay? Then the third one is to ask the federal government under the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act to compel the districts to provide these services. Well, I have to tell you, I was chair of the Education Committee for two sessions. I know well how little the federal government puts into the IDEA. This session of Congress, they have allocated a bit more money, but they have never lived up to their full responsibilities. I worry about these children. I worry about their families. I worry about the community that will be lost by sending these children home. I want to say to you, leave you with a final quote. I talked to the board of directors of the School for the Blind this morning. Elizabeth Rossarini, the chair, and she left me with a proverb. She said, Senator, I know you've tried hard, and I know everyone has good in their heart, but for me, there's none so blind as those who will not see. I thought it was quite fitting. It has sent shivers up my spine, down my legs, and the hair on the back of my neck is standing on end. Colleagues, this is a momentous decision we're making here. I understand the decision. I don't fault you for the decision, but I tell you that in my heart, I believe it's the wrong decision, and we will regret what we've done in the sake of saving money and finding a better way to educate these students. I think if we had taken a step back a lot sooner and done our job, we could have excelled at educating the students for the blind, School for the Blind. And I have to tell you, my final thought is, and I have said this before and I'll say it again in front of God and everybody here today, that leaving this in the hands of the Department of Education is a very scary thought. If the legislature, I'm very disappointed the board of directors was taken out of this bill to manage the regional program, because quite frankly, I think the legislature, who is the board of directors for the state, really needs to keep a very close eye on what we're doing here. Thank you, colleagues, for your time. Thank you for those who extended their time to allow me to speak today. And thank you for what's in your heart, which I know you have the same goal I do, which is serving the people of the state of Oregon. We just have a little bit different view about that today, but we will shake hands and be friends again when this is over. So thank you very much for your dedication and your time. And I wish all of you well and our children well. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Walker. Senator Jeff Cruz yielded his time. Recognize Senator Ted Ferrioli, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I sincerely appreciate the comments that I heard from the good senator from Eugene, and I agree with them. We have members on both sides of the aisle that are very troubled by this proposal, and they will vote their conscience. There is no question in my mind that the proponents of the bill have made a very strong business case for passing this bill. You look at and listen to the recommendations of the task force, and the unit costs seem extremely high. But I would submit to you that there's more in this equation than unit cost or bottom line business decisions. I don't believe you can make a good logical case for closing the school. And the reason I believe that that's true is this really will not save any money. I think the only way you accomplish the math or the algebra that shows that you save money is that it will not be the school for the blind that will be the line item issue. It will, in fact, be the local school districts where the current student body at the school for the blind are mainstreamed. And, in fact, as the responsibility is transferred away from the school for the blind, so will the cost. So I guess I would believe that that is a false economy. In point of fact, when these students are mainstreamed, we're going to be placing our trust and confidence in the local school districts, who often do not have the resources to deal with these issues, and we're going to be placing our trust and confidence in the state superintendent of public instruction. And I would submit to you that one of the cases that was made for the closure of the school for the blind is the condition of the facility. And it's interesting to note that the condition of this facility is specifically the responsibility of the superintendent of public instruction. Under the current and former superintendents of public instruction, this facility has been allowed to deteriorate shamefully. Until now, it does not meet the needs of the current student body, and it's unlikely that we as a legislature would be willing to invest the dollars necessary to bring that facility up to current standards. So we're going to trust this person who had the responsibility for maintaining that facility to also assure that the current student body, if dispersed to local school districts, are going to have all of the resources equivalent to those that they have currently. And I think that's a bit too much of a stretch. What we're going to be doing is requiring the local school district to develop independent education programs far beyond what they are used to for many of these students. And it's clearly acknowledged that there are many special needs for intensive training that are delivered, those needs are delivered and provided for at the current school for the blind, that will not be delivered and provided for in the many remote locations throughout the state where the student body will be dispersed. So I wonder if that isn't a burden that is beyond the capacity of the small, remote, rural school districts I represent, and whether it isn't even beyond the capacity of some of the larger, more urban school districts that many of you represent. Mr. President and colleagues, some of the special needs of the blind who are at the school for the blind also include special needs of those who are profoundly disabled. And I wonder if those folks will get the kind of individual attention and the kind of assistance that they have been getting, and whether or not the decision that we're about to make today isn't based more on frustration with our past failures and with our inability, perhaps, to step up and do the things that we would have to do to completely rehabilitate the school for the blind. Mr. President, I'll be voting no. Perhaps this is an emotional vote rather than a business case vote. Maybe it is more based on illogic than logic. But in some instances, I think issues come along that transcend the business case, have nothing to do with the bottom line, and really need to be made based on the need. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you. Senator Bill Morissette yielded his time. Recognize Senator Doug Whitsitt.
Thank you, Mr. President. As you remember, you assigned Senator Winters and I to a committee after the 2005 session to study the School for the Blind and the School for the Deaf. There were five meetings held. It was a broad, wide-based committee of legislators and those people who represent the School for the Blind and the deaf community, the blind community, educators. It was you did a good job of putting that committee together, Mr. President. And we learned a great deal. And one of the first things that we learned that almost all of the the residents of the school for the blind come from the Tri-County area right here around Salem. The fact of the matter is that I believe at that time there were only two students that did not come from those three counties. So all of the students who are badly impaired across the state are already being serviced in their communities and in their districts, because they're certainly not being provided service at the school for the blind. The facilities, we learned, Mr. President, are very old and in disrepair, and they are seismically unstable, completely unstable. The school for the blind at that time had 11 buildings that were being maintained and operated, and there were 33 students. Mr. President, that is a building for every three students. There were approximately three staff for each student at the school for the blind at that time. Mr. President, the maintenance people, the compensation for the maintenance people for the school for the deaf and the blind in the year 2005 cost more than $10,000 per student. Just the maintenance people. As has been said previously, school for the blind is a misnomer. The school has no education course that leads to graduation and has had not had so for more than a decade. The committee believed that the money could be better spent and that the money should stay with the blind and the deaf community, all of it. But it could be better spent by providing a different type of services at a different area. The original recommendation of the committee, which was unanimous, was to close the school for the blind and relocate it on the campus of the school for the deaf. That proposition was not accepted by the community. The second recommendation of the committee, and all but two, I believe, agreed to this recommendation, was to simply close the school for the blind summarily. Mr. President, this is a very difficult choice, and it's a very emotional choice. But I think it is the right economic choice, and I think it is a right choice for the visually impaired community of Oregon, in that we're spending about $8 million a year now, or $8 million a biennium, and this would be better applied to the nearly 1,000 visually impaired students across the state of Oregon, to provide them services in addition to what they are receiving now, which are generally not adequate. We wanted to see, the committee wanted to see, a facility where visually impaired students could be brought into the school, taught life skills and educational aids, and then put back into the community, and then done this on a sequential basis to help the mainstreaming, which is, colleagues, is what we've decided to do a number of years ago, is to try to mainstream disabled students in the public sector. So it's a difficult choice. It's a necessary choice. I urge an aye vote. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Widzett. Is there further discussion on this measure? Senator Fred Gerard, do you wish to close?
Thank you, Mr. President. I do. Colleagues, there is probably no tougher vote that we will face than this vote. It wrenches at your heart. It's just a really hard vote to cast. This isn't something that when you run for re-election, you put at the top of your things that you accomplished. I closed the school for the blind. This just isn't a good vote for a lot of reasons. However, it is the right thing to do. We made a decision to mainstream, and that decision is the good decision. That brings handicapped people, visually impaired people into the classrooms and puts them in a normal environment where they can learn to adapt and people can adapt to them. It is a very positive thing for a lot of different reasons. If you believe in mainstreaming, this is a very good bill. And I believe in the bottom of my heart that mainstreaming is the best for the visually impaired. We have to look at the facility that we have to operate with. The senator from Eastern Oregon gave a lot of reasons why that facility is not up to the level that it should be. That school has toxic mold. It has asbestos. It has leaking roofs. The costs are prohibitive in trying to refurbish that and keep it functional. So if you believe in mainstreaming like I do, this is a very good vote. It's a hard vote, and it's one that will wrench at my heart for a long time, but it is a vote that I am not afraid to cast, and I urge an aye vote.
Thank you. I have been advised by legislative counsel that I do not have a conflict of interest on this bill. However, out of abundance of caution, I wish to declare a potential conflict of interest. My employer, Western Oregon University, is one of the entities which could become a tenant of future facilities that may be built on the property which is now home, the Oregon School for the Blind. The question now arises upon the third reading and the final passage of House Bill 2834. Those who are of the opinion the bill shall pass will say aye as their names are called. Those opposed, no. Would the clerk please call the roll?
Morissette. Morse, Nelson, Przonski, Rosenbaum, Schrader, Starr, Telfer, Ferger, Walker, Whitsett, Winters, Atkinson, Bates, Bonamici, Boquist, Burdick, Carter, Devlin, Dingfelder, Ferrioli, George, Girard, Haas, Johnson, Cruz, Metzger, Juan Anderson, Monroe, President Courtney.
Yes.
Burdick. Metzger. Excuse, Starr, voting no, Atkinson, Boquist, Ferrioli, George, Haas, Cruz, Walker, Witt, Verger. 21 ayes.
House Bill 2834 have received a constitutional majority declared passed. The clerk will read the resolution. Second, I recognize Senator Bonamici, please.
Thank you. Mr. President, I request unanimous consent to return to the order of courtesies.
Please feel free to do so without objections.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'd like to have courtesies extended, please, to two students from the English as a Second Language program at Portland Community College Rock Creek, which is in my district. They're here today to observe the Legislative Assembly. They are actually ESL students of Legislative Counsel's Sean Brennan. Their names are Kako Kawasaki, and she's visiting from Japan, and I believe they're up in the gallery here, and also Noa Yen, who moved from Vietnam a year ago to join her family in Beaverton. They're both working to improve their English language skills and are interested in seeing today how state government works. So I request that courtesies be extended today. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you. I would like to extend the courtesies to each of you. Thanks for coming to the Oregon State Capitol. It's an honor and a privilege to have you here, and I hope you have a good day in the state capitol. We'll now return to the regular order of business. And we'll now read the resolution.
Senate Concurrent Resolution 16, congratulating Portland Trailblazers in success 2008-2009 season.
Recognize Senator Margaret Carter, please, who will carry the resolution.
Read.
Nice. Senator Carter, please.
Thank you, Mr. President and colleagues. It is an honor for me today, on behalf of the Oregon Legislative Assembly and the people of the state of Oregon, I'm excited and honored to bring to you Concurrent Resolution 16, congratulating the Portland Trailblazers. What an extraordinary season, and for their achievements as the 2009 co-champions of the Northwest Division of the Western Region Conference. We further congratulate their contributions to the community off the court. Blazer Mania, colleagues, is back. It's working all across this state. We have people on this floor in numbers who have attended the games with me and by themselves this year. 15,000 plus people gathered in a rally to cheer the Blazers on into the NBA playoffs. The team sold out 71 consecutive games. That is economic stability in our community. Guard Brandon Roy was selected for the NBA All-Stars game. Head coach Nate McMillan was named Western Coach of the Month in April 2009. We haven't had that in Oregon in a long time. The franchise won the prestigious 2008 Turnkey Prism Award from the University of Massachusetts Amherst Eisenberg School of Management for the Make It Better slogan, Community Outreach Initiative. Ladies and gentlemen, the Blazers are on the move and the state of Oregon is recognized nationally. Our Oregon is now home to the Northwest Division champions, and FCR 16 salutes the Blazers for their outstanding accomplishments. I ask you to join me, please, in saluting our Trailblazers. Team President, Mr. Larry Miller, and I'll give you information under courtesies on these people. Coach Nate McMillan, who is sitting at the president's desk. Mr. Larry Miller at the desk with me, long-term friend, even before becoming a member of the Trailblazers. Mr. Jay Isaac, my long-term friend, Senior Vice President for Business Affairs, sitting with Senator Johnson. Vice President for Community Relations, Ms. Tracy Rose, a longtime friend, that is sitting with Senator Winters. Mr. Bill Evans, Director of Corporate Communications, who is sitting with the President Pro Tem. And we salute the champions and the Blazer organization. The city of Portland and the people of Oregon are enormously proud of the Trailblazers. Colleagues, Blazer mania is alive, and we are economically prospering and socially prospering from the fine work of the young men who represent us in this state. Young men who people have not been afraid to say that they are truly trailblazers instead of the other word that I've heard many of you use before. I am proud of this team. It is my family, and I stand up on the annals any place I am to talk about this great team and this great family members of management who has done a good job of bringing the Trailblazers back alive and well. Under courtesies, Mr. President, I'll come back with this unless you would like for me to just do it while I'm still talking. So, Mr. President, thank you very much. Doesn't take me much to get started. I would like to also, as I introduce the President, Mr. Larry Miller, and President of the fabulous NBA Portland Trailblazers visiting the Oregon Senate today. As President of Trailblazers, he is responsible for all aspects of the organization's business portfolio, including all team business activities, the Rose Quarter and Rose Radio. On the business side, the team led the NBA in attendance with a 32% increase in game attendance and a 222% increase in new business revenue for the 07-08 season. For the year 2008-2009 season, the franchise has a 95% season ticket retention rate, third best in the NBA. Prior to joining the Trailblazers, Mr. Miller served at Nike, where I bugged him to death, and he gave me money to run the Urban League. I also ask courtesy to be extended to my friend, Mr. J.E. Isaac, Senior Vice President for Business Affairs, BBA from the University of Kentucky, and I don't know the mascot, Mr. President. Business Administration with a Juris Doctorate degree from Florida State University. Ms. Tracy Rose, Vice President of Community Relations, seated with Senator Winters again. She attended the Center for Corporate Citizenship Program at Boston College. Ms. Rose oversees the organization's community involvement. Mr. Bill Evans, Director of Trailblazers Corporate Communications, seated with Senate President Pro Tem Rick Metzger, is a graduate of Northwestern University and previously worked for teams in Seattle,
Milwaukee, and Cleveland. While at Cleveland, he directed LeBron James through his rookie season in 2003-2004. Not only do I ask you to welcome this very fine group of management staff from the Trailblazer family, my family, but I ask you to support us as we go through the process of recognizing the Oregon State Senate, recognizing the Portland Trailblazers. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you. Is there further discussion on the resolution? Thank you. The question now arises, do you wish to say further remarks? Senator Carl, you can take it at liberty if you wish to do so. The question now arises, upon the third reading, the final passage of SCR 16. Those in the opinion of the bill to pass, say aye. Those opposed, no. Clerk, we call the roll.
Morris. Nelson. Przonski. Rosenbaum. Schrader. Schrader. Starr. Telfer. Berger. Walker. Whitsett. Winters. Atkinson. Bates. Bates. Bonamici. Boquist. Boquist. Burdick. Carter. Devlin. Dingfelder. Farioli. George. Girard. Haas. Johnson. Cruz. Metzger. Mons Anderson. Monroe. Morissette. President Courtney.
See, yes.
Not answering. Bates and Boquist. Absent. Bates, Boquist, 20 ayes.
SCR 16, having received the constitutional majority, declared passed. I'd like to say something to the Portland Trailblazers, and specifically to you, Coach Nate McMillan, and to the players. The Senate has now just given you its highest recognition, the Oregon State Senate. I'm not going to get into the winning and losing or whether or not you make the playoffs or how far you advance in the playoffs or win the NBA championship, how far you are away from that. I'm not going to get into draft choices. I'll leave that up to the sports columnists and sports reporters and to the banter that goes back and forth on sports radio as well as the press conferences that even the Trailblazers may hold to decide which draft picks you're going to take and all that. I don't want to. That's done daily, 24/7. It is my perception as an individual who's about to become 66 years old, who's lived in this state since 1969, that the relationship of Oregon and her people is very special when it comes to the Portland Trailblazers. It's a very special relationship. Yeah, the winning is there and the cheering and everything, but I think the special relationship involves the conduct of you, Coach Nate McMillan, and the players in particular, because you're the face of the organization, as well as the organization, in terms of how you conduct yourselves as adults, model yourselves for other adults' behavior, our behavior, particularly for the young people. And I have to say, you are doing an extraordinary job of civility, good manners, good sportsmanship. In this day and age of incredible competitiveness, winning at all costs, and Lord knows you have to and want to do that, you have found a special way to conduct yourselves on that court and off that court and in everyday life as a coach and the players and his organization that is a true model for our adult community and our young people. And I want to thank you as a member of the State Senate on this day, as the President of the Oregon State Senate. It is truly a high honor and privilege that you would come here today and that we could give you this recognition in this way. Thank you very much. Recognize Senator Bill Morissette. We're under propositions and motions. I don't have that one. We're under propositions and motions. Is that right? So, Bill, Senator Morissette, you're going to move something on House Bill 3279.
Mr. President, I move consideration of House Bill 3279 to be taken from today's place on from the place on today's calendar and placed on the Friday, June 12th calendar.
So, Bill Morissette has moved the consideration of House Bill 3279 be taken from its place on today's calendar and placed on the Friday, June 12th calendar. To your motion, please.
Further discussion is necessary.
Thank you. Discussion. The question is on taking House Bill 3279 from today's calendar and placing on a Friday's June 12th calendar. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, no. This motion is carried. I will now ask the clerk to please read the committee report and the minority report on Senate Bill 767, please.
Senate Committee Report. President Cordy, Committee on Rules, to whom is referred Senate Bill 767A, having had similar considerations, directed reports back recommending due pass amendments, engrossed bill, printed be engrossed. Senate Minority Report. President Cordy, minority on your Committee on Rules, to whom is referred Senate Bill 767A, having had a similar consideration, respectfully reports back recommending due pass with different amendments to engrossed bill, printed be engrossed minority.
I will now recognize Senator Richard Devlin.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senate colleagues, I move that the committee report on Senate Bill 767 be adopted.
Senator Richard Devlin has moved that the committee report on Senate Bill 767 be adopted. Would you please explain the committee report?
Mr. President, Senate colleagues, I bring to you today Senate Bill 767, a bill mandating a comprehensive review of virtual schools in our state. This bill has received extensive consideration in the Senate Education Committee and comes to you from the Rules Committee. The final product is the result of many hours of testimony from all parties who have an interest in this legislation. Colleagues, in 2005, the legislature passed SB 1071, creating the Oregon Virtual School District. It also put into statute that public virtual charter schools are required to have at least a 50% of their students reside in the district in which the school is located. It was not contemplated that the 50% requirement could be waived. However, several private vendors have sought a waiver of the 50% requirement from the State Board of Education. The board has not standardized guidelines for determining when to grant such a waiver, creating issues of consistency and fairness in the system, the entire system of public education. Lack of clarity surrounding online education has resulted in some unintended consequences. Certain parties have taken advantage of loopholes in the system. Taxpayer dollars are going to for-profit schools with no accountability or transparency to Oregon taxpayers. SB 767 is intended to place a timeout on the approval of new virtual charter schools and allow a legislative task force sufficient time to craft a thoughtful virtual schools policy for the state. Specifically, the bill places a moratorium on the approval of any new virtual public charter school and on any enrollment growth in existing virtual public charter schools that do not comply with the 50% requirement. Second, it requires evidence of sound financial management and budget transparency for all existing virtual public charter schools. Three, it establishes an online task force with members jointly appointed by the Speaker and the President to study the virtual school issue. The work group is required to report on their findings and required, I repeat that again, required to introduce legislation for the 2010 supplemental legislative session. It ensures teachers and administrators of virtual charter schools must be under the direction and control of the public governing body, in this case, the governing body for the public charter school, and not simply contracted through a private third party. Let me now comment briefly on some misconceptions about this bill. There has been much talk about the value of these programs and the supposed intent of the legislature to shut down schools. To be clear, I have been a longtime advocate of distance learning. I believe that virtual schools are actually important for a select group of students. I believe that we should not be like many states throughout the nation that have let basically schools just develop with a random policy without any clear direction from the state, sort of an ad hoc policy, and that's why I'm putting this forward. It actually is not intended in any way to impact any virtual school program. At the end of the day, SB 767 seeks to address a major problem in our school system, the lack of accountability and transparency in the use of taxpayer dollars. During a time when we are pinching every penny to keep our schools open, we need to know where our education dollars are heading and make sure that the children are reaping the benefits and not outside corporations. The moratorium ensures that all parties will come to the table, work together to develop a thoughtful online education policy for the school children of Oregon. The bill will give us some time to look more closely at the complex issues we confront. issues of transparency with taxpayer dollars, fairness to children in Oregon's public schools, and doing what's right by children and their families that have opted for a virtual education. The task force created by the bill will be well-equipped to find answers to these concerns by facilitating an open, honest conversation about how to deal with these issues, and I look forward to their recommendations and to the 2010 supplemental session and considering their proposed legislation. Colleagues, thank you for the time, and I urge your support for SB 767.
Thank you. Now I recognize Senator Ted Ferrioli, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move the minority report be substituted for the committee report on Senate Bill 767.
Senator Ted Ferrioli has moved that the minority report be substituted for the committee report on Senate Bill 767. Would you please explain your motion?
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, the minority report on Senate Bill 767 actually creates the task force that we should be creating with this effort. Senate Bill 767 itself, the main bill, greatly increases regulations on virtual schools. And these regulations are so onerous and burdensome that they could eventually, permanently, shut the doors of virtual charter schools and would impact the future of about 3,000 students currently educated by online charter schools here in Oregon. With the passage of the main bill, the state will hinder the parents' ability to choose the best education for children and send the message that Oregon is not open to new and innovative ways to improve the quality of education. Mr. President, the main bill is an interesting bill because it actually seeks to stop the spread of new technologies in education. The minority report fosters a task force that will help us do exactly that, and that is spread new technology and innovation into education. Mr. President, the Oregonian Editorial Board noted the strong role public virtual schools could play in the future, when they wrote, quote, and Mr. President, permission to quote from printed material.
Free to do so.
Thank you, Mr. President. Quote, virtual schools hold tremendous promise, and those who are pioneering online learning in this state should be encouraged, not driven away. April 3rd, 2009, end quote. Mr. President, that is what our minority report does. It encourages a thoughtful discussion of the services that could be provided online through online education. The minority report creates the Oregon Online Education Task Force relating to public charter schools. It requires that the task force study and identify means to provide online course operations with important curriculum content and highly qualified instructors. The task force would report to the Legislative Interim Committees on Education by December 15, 2009, so that we could continue this discussion in February and determine the role that online charter schools could play, should play, and will play in the state of Oregon. Mr. President, the Obama administration has made $5 billion available to states in the form of competitive grants, mostly in the race to the top funds. The Department of Education has been incredibly clear. They will provide significant funding to states who embrace improvement and innovation. Embrace improvement and innovation, not impede innovation and improvement. These grants provide Oregon with an opportunity that should be embraced. Rather than rushing to place restrictions on online charter schools, let's take a more thoughtful approach and work to encourage and enhance the use of technology through the creation of the Oregon Online Education Task Force, which is precisely what our minority report does. Mr. President, the task force that the minority report creates actually includes parents in that task force. The main bill does not. It's just imperative that we include the consumers and the parents, guardians, and patrons of this virtual charter school enterprise in the task force. We need folks who are strong advocates. We also need folks who are strong realists and we need futurists to help us determine the direction and trajectory of online education in Oregon. Today, colleagues, you can take courses from Massachusetts Institute of Technology, George Fox College. Any one of 1,000 different educational institutions are offering online course content today. The idea that we would limit who may attend, what course content may be available, and also limit the structure under which this online course content can be developed simply is an attempt to stop the advent of the 21st century in education. And Mr. President, I urge our colleagues to vote for the minority report and to substitute the minority report for Senate Bill 767. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you. We're under the discussion of the minority report. Recognize Senator Bruce Starr, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. I stand in support of the minority report, Mr. President. I believe that I was the first individual in the state capitol that drafted a bill creating charter schools. I was a staff person at the time working for my father who introduced that bill in the 1999 legislative session. I'm a longtime supporter of freedom as it relates to education. And that's what we're talking about today. The minority report contemplates continuing and expanding the freedom of parents and students and administrators and teachers to provide choices to children in Oregon. Colleagues, we have a generation of young people growing up in Oregon today that are unbelievably tech savvy. The age of the computer has happened since I've come through school. But we have children today that know how to do things with technology that I believe most of us on this Senate floor have no idea. Why wouldn't we embrace that technology as a tool to help to educate Oregon's children? We should. The minority report does. The bill does not. Colleagues, we talk a lot about being green, about being environmentally friendly, about cutting down on carbon emissions. Colleagues, virtual charter schools are the greenest school opportunity for children that exists in our state. Colleagues, these virtual charter schools, they encourage relationships between our Oregon children, the ones that take advantage of these schools, and their parents, where you have a significant amount of interaction between child and parent. That's a good thing. That's a positive thing. Those kinds of individuals, those kinds of parents are ones that are investing their time, energy, and talent into their children in ways that we should encourage, not discourage. Colleagues, the minority report will continue to encourage those kind of relationships, that kind of time spent together. Colleagues, virtual charter schools provide flexibility that certain segment of Oregon children absolutely need in order to succeed. The one-size-fits-all system of public schools does not serve all Oregon children well. It serves a vast majority of them, no question. But there are a segment of Oregon children that will not be well served in our traditional public schools. Charter schools and virtual charter schools, as contemplated in this bill and this minority report, will serve that segment of Oregon children well. They have served them well. We should expand it. We should encourage that. Unfortunately, our current system is broken. As we, you know, look at the kinds of budgets that we're facing in this environment of our economy and the state of the state's budget, the kinds of dollars that we as legislators are going to send back to our local school districts, virtual charter schools saves money. Saves every school district where we send kids to a virtual school, charter school, it saves those dollars, saves money. Colleagues, I want to talk about the politics behind this bill, but I'm not going to, for fear that I will step over some lines in the rules on this Senate floor. but the politics that are surrounding this bill are troublesome at best. And this is not the Oregon Senate in its best in this debate on this bill. Colleagues, I urge a yes vote on the adoption or on the substitution of the minority report. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you. I recognize Senator Jeff Cruz, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. Colleagues, at the beginning of this legislative session, I was part of a bipartisan, bicameral work group on this very issue. And we invited all players to join in the work group, and we had several meetings, and including the chairman of the State Board of Education. And after a few meetings, we came to the conclusion that there were more things we didn't know than we did know about the subject. The position we arrived at was that for the existing virtual charters, we should leave that in the hands of the state board, who had spent a great deal of time on it. And what we, as a legislative assembly, needed to do was to create a work group to study the issue for the future and come back to this legislative assembly with recommendations. Now, one could say that both the committee report and the minority report do that. But here's where they differ, Mr. President. Here is the makeup of this work group in the committee report. One member from the Department of Ed, one member from public education employees, one school administrator, one representative of school boards, one representative of ESDs, one representative of public charter schools, and one representative of the university system. I don't think that's a broad-based group, broad enough base to deal with this issue. These are the same old folks, and for a large degree, a number of those groups have already stated that they're opposed to charter schools and especially opposed to virtuals. The minority report, however, gives us a very broad-based, comprehensive work group. Here's who's on it. One member of the State Board of Education, one representative from the School Employees Association, one representative from the Oregon Education Association, a representative from the school boards, a superintendent of an ESD, a representative of the Northwest Center for Educational Options, a principal of a virtual charter school, a principal of a school district that sponsors a virtual charter school, a parent of a student currently enrolled in an online charter school. So, colleagues, the minority report gives us a work group that actually has some knowledge and basis in the subject that we are attempting to wrestle with. You know, my key issues with this are twofold. Number one, I've been a supporter of charter schools, and I think any alternative education option that we can make available to our students, we are better off for that. But the other issue here, colleagues, is quite simply what a valuable tool virtual curricula is going to be to all schools in the state of Oregon. It's vitally important. Colleagues, the minority report allows us to move forward on this subject in a way that we can have cooperation, we can build consensus, and move forward in an incredibly instructive way. I guarantee you if we defeat the minority report and pass the committee report, we won't reach that objective. And isn't that what we're supposed to do, is find consensus and find solutions? Colleagues, we need to support the minority report. It is very reasoned and a very appropriate approach to this subject.
Thank you. I recognize Senator Fred Girard.
Thank you, Mr. President. To the minority report.
To the minority report.
Colleagues, we have a choice here, either to support virtual schools and charter schools, or we have a choice to rule against them, and depending on if you want to vote for the minority report or the majority report. Colleagues, I have a fair amount of education. And I'd like to take you back to a few days in high school, and I go back a ways. I go back to a physics class where I was taught with a slide rule. We didn't have a calculator. This was before calculators, and it was way before computers. No, we actually had indoor plumbing. However, that classroom, if you look at how the class was taught then and is taught the same now, if you have 30 students in that class, you have to go at the rate of the average student. We have students that are above that can achieve faster. We have students that will be left behind because they can't learn that fast. So what happened in my lifetime that I'm just absolutely thrilled about, and that is the invention of the personal computer. That has changed everything. You think about all the inventions in our lifetimes. I don't care, if you're at least my age, you would have to rate the personal computer as the number one invention. So what can a personal computer do? It can tailor through software. It can individualize a person's education so that they will go at the rate that they are capable of going at. This is a great invention and a great tool, and we should not be restricting it. I would strongly urge you to vote for the minority report. This is a very important bill.
Thank you. Recognize Senator Frank Morris, please.
Thank you, Mr. President and colleagues. I rise in support of the minority report. From the perspective of having followed this issue through the Senate Education and General Government Committee, the bill file is very thick. The amendments were great. But the thing that bothers me about this process is the culture around which this issue is being debated. And the culture is very simply virtual charter schools in Oregon do not have a place. And the difference fundamentally between the minority report and the majority report is the majority report steers the outcome. And the assumption is that we will not embrace technology. We will not embrace private providers who have invested huge sums of money to develop fantastic resources. And we will deny, colleagues, we will deny the opportunity of rural Oregon students to have the same quality and the same access to the courses and curriculums that exists in Lake Oswego or Corvallis or Albany or Beaverton. What about Monument, Oregon, that little tiny school district? How are those students going to have access to the similar opportunities that the students do in the large urban schools? The only way that we can address this problem, and we must embrace it, not try to kill it. We must embrace it, and that is the use of technology to provide in this virtual environment that opportunity for those students that we have in the same opportunity we have in our urban schools. So, colleagues, I'm very, very concerned, having followed the culture out of which this bill arises, that the agenda is to deny that opportunity, not embrace it. And for that reason, Mr. President and colleagues, I stand in very strong support of the minority report. Thank you.
Thank you. Discussion? Senator Atkinson, do you wish to close?
I do, Mr. President, and request permission to read from printed material on occasion.
Please feel free to do so.
Mr. President, this has been a very interesting morning, very interesting choice, the majority party and the bills that they chose and the order. First order was closing a school for the blind. Second order was changing gears to the Trailblazers. And third is now closing charter schools. Very interesting. This is in support of the minority report. Let me go through as we were in preparation for this discussion. Four words that stuck out in the proponent of the majority bill of why we should not pass the minority report. And I have issues with four of those words. The first word was loophole. The majority bill, Senate Bill 767, closes a loophole. That's an interesting choice. Loophole is a word that is used when there's something clearly being taken advantage of. Throughout my bill file, I have not heard one person refer to a loophole. In fact, I've heard success. I guess the only loophole is that there has been success with charter schools. There has been success with virtual charter schools. The loophole is that one public body, one well-funded organization who employs an army of lobbyists is threatened by the loophole of success, and the success is called competition. That is the loophole that the majority bill wishes to close. That is the loophole that we believe in the minority is good. The loophole has been people and children have been successful. The next word that was used that I have some issues with is the phrase time out. We need to have a time out so that we can study the issue. Now, I have been a long-standing critic of task forces and blue ribbon panels because I believe that this body is a task force. We are the blue ribbon panel. I have not been a fan of task forces and or timeouts. I've been a long-standing proponent of the Big Look Task Force, which created a $1.4 million bill that did nothing after we took a timeout. So here we are about to take a timeout. I have a problem with timeout. The third word was task force. Now here's the problem with the phrase task force. My good friend and colleague from Roseburg pointed out the difference in the majority and the minority. Allow me to read from the minority. The minority report has one representative from the teachers union, one representative from the school employees union, one representative from the Oregon School Boards Union, I mean Association, one superintendent of an educational service district, one representative from the Northwest Center for Education Options, and one principal of a virtual charter school. If you know, even though that person would be clearly outnumbered and people who've already made up their minds about educational opportunity and competition and loophole, at least they're on the board. If you look to the majority report, interestingly, one representative of the Northwest Center of Educational Options is deleted. One principal of a virtual charter school is deleted. They're not in the task force of lobbyists that are going to study the issue as we have a timeout to study loopholes. They're not in the majority bill. The last word that was brought up in the first carrier that I am very interested in is the word transparency. Because we need to be transparent. It's the new buzzword of this session, transparent, just like sustainable. Well, let's just leave sustainable aside for a second. Let's talk about transparency. If you look at the bill, very front of the bill is at the request of the Confederation of Oregon School Administrators, the American Federation of Teachers in Oregon, the Oregon School Employees Association, and the Teachers Union, the Oregon Education Association. The good senator from Hillsborough said that he would not cross the line about the influence of those particular groups on this particular body, and I will not do that either. But I will read from printed material, Mr. President, because in the teachers' union legislative agenda for this session, and I quote, "The OEA shall develop legislation to repeal current charter school statutes unless legislation is passed that protects public schools." First, charter school legislation, again quoting from the teachers union website and legislative action. Charter school legislation, including current charter school law that does not address all of the issues listed above, will not be supported by the OEA. And it goes on. Mr. President, as we're talking about transparency, what we're really talking about here is a very powerful lobby organization ability to get something through this legislature. We had that a couple days ago. And here we have it again. Here we have Goliath going to pick on David. David's weakling. David is full of loopholes and needs a timeout so he can grow up, and we need a task force to see if David's going to accelerate the right way. And David's clearly not being transparent enough because he's only got a slingshot. But that's what it is. This is David and Goliath. Goliath has got a whopping checkbook, and virtual charter schools has got a slingshot with some rocks in it. The problem is they're good at throwing it. They're throwing off good kids. Kids are getting a good education. The Minority Report, Mr. President, simply allows, if you're going to go through all the rigmarole of timeouts, task forces, and looking at loopholes, it simply says that the people who are actually engaged in this kind of educational options actually have to be at the table. Not the people who requested the majority bill, who are the only people in the bill, in the building, who are actually listed in the majority bill. That is, the people whose bill this is requested on are the only ones who are in the task force. The people who are actually doing this for a living in virtual charter schools, in charter schools, have no place at the table. Now, most of us, good colleagues, believe in the word fairness. Fairness, something we all campaign on: honesty, integrity, fairness. This isn't fair. You can't even look at the majority bill with a straight face and call it fair. You all know it's not fair. This isn't fair. The Minority Report, Mr. President, is fair because it says if you are in charter schools, you actually get to come to the task force. You're invited. The majority bill isn't fair. It's not transparent. Or actually, maybe it's too transparent and people aren't brave enough to say just how transparent it is. Mr. President, I would urge a yes vote on the Minority Report because it's fair. I would urge a vote on the Minority Report because it's good and honest. Because people are getting an education, because we want every kid the chance to succeed. I don't think we should go by some lobby organization's playbook to set public policy. We shouldn't do that. We should be above that. Please vote for the Minority Report.
Senator Devlin has demanded a call of the Senate, and he is joined by Senator Lori Montes Anderson and Senator Suzanne Bonamici. The doorkeepers will bar the doors, and the sergeant of arms will attend. The clerk, please call the roll.
Atkinson, Bates, Bonamici, Boquist, Burdick, Carter, Devlin, Dingfelder, Ferrioli, George, Gerard, Haas, Johnson, Cruz, Metzger, Montes Anderson, Monroe, Morissette, Morse, Nelson, Przonski, Rosenbaum, Schrader, Starr, Telfer, Ferger, Walker, Whitsett, Winters. President Courtney.
He is here. Where is Senator Johnson? All members subject to the call are now present. Question now arises upon the substitution of the minority report for the committee report. All those in favor will answer aye as the names are called, and all those opposed, no. The clerk, please call the roll.
Nelson. Nelson. Brzezinski. Rosenbaum. Brzezinski. Rosenbaum. Schrader. Schrader. Starr. Telfer. Verger. Walker. Whitsett. Winters. Atkinson. Bates. Bonamici. Boquist. Burdick. Carter. Devlin. Dingfelder. Ferrioli. George. Gerard. Haas. Johnson. Cruz. Metzger. Monzinerson. Monroe. Morissette. Morissette. Morse. President Courtney.
No.
Voting no. Bates, Bonamici, Burdick, Carter, Devlin, Dingfelder, Haas, Johnson, Metzger, Monzinerson, Monroe, Morissette, Brzezinski, Rosenbaum, Schrader, Verger, Walker, President Courtney. 12 ayes.
The minority report has failed. In accordance with SR 8.602, the Senate will take action immediately on the third reading of Senate Bill 7667 as amended by the committee report. The clerk will please read the bill.
Senate Bill 677, Senate Bill 6767, relating to public charter schools and declaring emergency.
I now recognize Senator Richard Devlin.
Thank you, Mr. President, Senate colleagues. I'm presented the full committee report earlier. What I'm going to do now is to try to answer a few of the questions that were presented during the consideration of the minority report. First, it was questioned what the makeup of this task force is, but it wasn't mentioned that in this task force there's a representative from charter schools that could be a virtual school representative, and it wasn't mentioned also that there's a representative of the Oregon University system. It is the hope that that person will either be a dean of one of our public schools of education or a professor with a background in virtual and distance learning. It also was not mentioned that there will be members from both chambers and members from both parties on the task force. In regards to embracing technology, I think if anyone wanted to sit down with me for 2 or 3 hours and discuss technology, I could have a pretty good discussion with any of you about virtual schools and distance learning. I don't want to sound too wonkish here, but if you really want to learn about the vast nature of virtual schools and the vast nature of distance learning, go just Google virtual schools clearinghouse. You will find in that if you look at the right location, a report about 168 pages, which gives you a very clear view of all the virtual school, all the distance learning programs throughout this nation. And if you look a little bit deeper, you will find that those states that have got ahead of the policy before they've had some of the problems that we are starting to have experience have very vibrant programs, but it's important to have the public policy in place first. Dollars were mentioned, that this is a cheaper option. I want to tell you something about dollars. I don't know what the appropriate amount is for a virtual school. No one has really studied what the appropriate amount is for a virtual school. But the system that we have now basically puts them in the same boat as a brick-and-mortar public charter school, which means they get the full amount. If it's $6,000 is the full amount for an ADMW, they get 5 or 10% less than that, based solely upon what the age of the student is that's being educated. Let me tell you where the profits from that goes. If it's from Connections Academy, and I'm not speaking about ORCA, I'm speaking about the national interest, it goes to Baltimore. If it's from K through 12, it goes to Virginia. The profits go to Virginia. If it's from Insight, it goes to the University of Phoenix in Arizona. And if it's from Kaplan, it goes to their headquarters in Florida. We don't know what the level of profit is from these operations. We don't know how much goes into instruction. We don't know how much goes into research and development. Those are all things that if you want transparency and you want to know how tax dollars are being spent, you should know. Finally, this purpose of this bill and the purpose of how it is structured is to bring all of those interests together. You have been visited by many of those private interests, each one of you, and they are motivated by something that is very real and something that is a very proper motivation. They are in business. They should be in business to make a profit. That's why they are there. All we are doing is trying to provide some transparency to that. It's not just Oregon. It doesn't depend on the state. The standard modus operandi for these organizations is to avoid legislation being passed in any state that regulates their operation. What I'm asking, basically, is for us to put this task force together. A decision has to be made in February. This is going to bring everybody to the table. They will have to come to the table because that is how we will make this determination, and that is how we will march forward with technology, and that is how we will have good virtual school programs and good distance learning programs.
Thank you. Recognize Senator Jeff Cruz, please.
Thank you, Mr. President, colleagues. I appreciate the good carrier's comments. All members of the task force in the majority report were mentioned by me when I made the comparison. And to say that one representative of a public charter school, not necessarily a virtual school, is on a task force. One out of over a dozen. One. Boy, that's really fair. That's really partisan. Mr. President, permission to read from printed material?
Please feel free to do so.
A couple quotes that I found were interesting. This from the Register Guard. Shutting down virtual schools in their current incarnation would inflict an injustice upon 4,000 or so students enrolled in them. The education system should recognize that online education holds promise. From the Medford Mail Tribune, Senate Bill 767's passage would amount to an acknowledgement of what critics like to claim about education's bureaucracy, that the money and politics come before the kids. That's a message we hope legislators won't agree to send. And finally, the last quote from a bastion of conservative thought, Willamette Week. Oregon Education Association, a powerful union representing 47,000 teachers, is doing its best to kill Oregon's largest online charter school. President Obama said new approaches can help the world's wealthiest nation to stop being an educational laggard. Politics and ideology have too often trumped our progress, Obama said. Add Senate Bill 767 and OEA to Obama's list of culprits. That's from Willamette Week. Colleagues, we cannot afford to put our foot on the air hose of progress in education. The majority report does that. The carrier talked about profit and how somehow that's a bad thing. I would point out that the makers of textbooks are for-profit institutions. I would point out that contractors who build our schools are for-profit institutions. Profit is not a four-letter word. The real point here and the real emphasis should be on the quality of the product, the quality of the education being offered. We have tested programs here that do work. I do agree we need to have more study. We need to get ahead of the curve on this thing. But colleagues, if you look at the makeup of the task force and the committee report, I can guarantee you what the outcome will be, and it will not be favorable to charter schools. I urge a no vote on this. We can do this without having this bill.
Thank you. I recognize Senator Larry George. Recognize Senator Larry George, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. I just have a few comments. My mom, when I was a child, my biggest thing I liked to do was read history books. And so as soon as I learned to read, she would give me history books. And I was always taken in history by these moments in history where people, the common knowledge, the common thought at the time was something that we look back retroactively and see is so ridiculous. And the one that we all think of, that where there was this heresy of an individual who dared to think that the world was round, when the Pope himself said the world is flat. There are all types of moral situations through history, huge issues. Issues of slavery, where we thought that one person could own another person. Times in history, just recent history, where women weren't allowed to vote. And then small things where a buggy maker fights for regulations that would shut down somebody who wanted to build an innovative new horseless carriage. And we see that every day in this building where people use regulations as a way to stop progress. And I look at this bill and I almost laugh. Okay, fine. If you're going to be the part of the majority and you're going to support 767, I'm going to make a prediction here. This will be repealed. And the reason why this bill will be repealed by a future legislature is because this blocks the inevitable progress of humanity towards getting its information in the quickest, most inexpensive way. If you think, and if some union thinks, that they can block progress of virtual schools and getting that information by passing Senate Bill 767, your victory is hollow because you will be looked back at and scoffed. There is no way that we are not going to have virtual schools of the future. There is no way that is not in our future. And any attempt right now to try to pander to one interest group as a way to shut down charter schools that use the virtual process is ridiculous. So go ahead and vote yes on this bill. And in future legislatures, we will talk about how ridiculous it was that a majority of the legislature in 2009 voted against computers and the idea of virtual learning. Folks, we all know that this is a dumb bill. We all know that this is going backwards, that there is nothing progressive about this piece of legislation. This bill is about taking us a step backwards because people are afraid of the future. I am not afraid of the future. I am not afraid of what may happen to our children if we empower them with every possible tool for education possible, with as many options as they have, give their parents as many options as they possibly can. What charter schools have opened up is a brand new world that we as the legislature could never have thought of. And what people are afraid of with charter schools is that they're innovative. There are innovative charter schools that are so far to the political left that I can't believe they're charter schools. And there's schools that are virtual schools, and people are going out there and doing things like just art schools and all kinds of things that are just innovative. And that's happening because a few people stood strong on this floor and passed charter schools. And the same people who are asking us to pass 767 today are the same people who fought against that innovation back in 2001. And the problem is that they didn't recognize the innovation and the progress that would happen if we allowed parents and teachers and students and educational experts to come together and find innovative ways to educate our kids. Bottom line, folks, if you vote yes, you're probably going to be victorious today. But I will promise you, people will look back in history and laugh that we sat here in 2008 to try to shut down virtual charter schools. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you. Recognize Senator Brian Boquist.
Permission to read from printed material, Mr. President.
Please feel free to do so.
Thank you, Mr. President. Colleagues, I wasn't going to say anything, but I did want to correct the record from the carrier. I have had no private sector interest visit me in my office in regards to this bill whatsoever. My bill folder is full of one supporting document that supports this bill, and I quote, Mr. President, says, this information is compiled by the requesters of SB 767, and frankly, colleagues, I didn't read it. And for the record, I've got 35, 40, 50 emails and flyers sitting in my folder, and I skimmed through them. I saw that they all opposed the majority report. About 2 years ago, I kind of made my decision on virtual schools. And that comes from Bill Gates at Microsoft and Warren Buffett, who got together with a handful of other people, Democrats, Republicans, Independents, so on and so forth, and made a broad claim. And this is their claim. Public education in America is a failure. No matter whether you agree or disagree with it, it is the most expensive system in the world. We don't rank in the top 10. We're always complaining that we need more money for OSHU or University of Oregon or schools of excellence because we can't compete with countries like China, Pakistan, India, Brazil, and elsewhere. Now, I would agree with good Senator George here that in the end, no matter what we do, people are going to seek education to try and be competitive. But we're in a depression. And we're in a depression right now in which people need to be trained as rapidly as possible, and we need to get the economy back on our feet, or we're going to be a third-rate nation within this decade. And when you got a lot of people saying we need to get in the 21st century in our educational system, virtual schools is one way. Are there bad virtual schools? Absolutely. How many audits have we seen from ESDs that, you know, were buying airplanes and doing stuff? We didn't suspend ESDs. Kind of torn my up a little bit and made it elect boards and a few things like that, but we kept going forward. If we want to be in the 21st century and we want to be a first-rate nation, we need to defeat this bill today or our people are simply going to ignore us. Thank you, Mr. President.
Recognize Senator Bill Morsett, please.
Mr. President, I agree with the senator from Sherwood that there's no way that we will not have charter or virtual schools. We will have virtual schools. My goal is to have a state-regulated program and have each district able to control the students from their district. I think the system is like a sieve right now. There's money leaking out all over it that is public school education money. I think that the charter school program, which I was opposed to, has been successful. I think the virtual school program, which I am opposed to in its present form, is successful. That is part of our current and future education. That's part of one of the important tools. So it isn't that we are denying the value of the virtual school system. We are simply trying to protect the districts, who some of whom are losing money. We're trying to protect, make sure that the quality is there. I think our one of our concerns is accountability. We need transparency. And I think that that's where we're headed. So we will have a virtual school program.
Thank you. I recognize Senator Chris Telfer.
Thank you, Mr. President. As a certified public accountant, in order to maintain my license, I need to renew it every 2 years. And with that renewal has to come 80 hours of continuing education. And when I started my session here in January, I was a few hours short, but figured I might be able to sit in on a class somewhere in Salem or maybe buzz up to Portland someday and take, you know, sit through an eight-hour class. Well, I underestimated the time commitment here, and so was unable to do that. So last week, I was able to take two classes online and complete my 80 hours. Both those classes were approved by the Oregon Society of CPAs and the American Institute of CPAs. They were done online, and there was no requirement for a moratorium. Both my profession just moved along with the 21st century and started looking at being able to improve our education and improve our skills as a CPA by using the computer. And so I'm happy to say that I will be recertified again come June 30th, and I did it through the Internet, online, and there was no need for a moratorium to figure out how I could improve those skills. So I would encourage you to not place a moratorium on virtual education, that it's part of the 21st century, and I'm very glad that we have that capability.
Thank you. Recognize Senator Suzanne Bonamici.
Thank you, Mr. President. Colleagues, as a member of the committee that heard the testimony about this bill and as a longtime advocate of public education, I rise in support of Senate Bill 767. Mr. President, there's been a suggestion that those of us who support this bill don't care about students or about their success. And I want to assure you, colleagues, that nothing could be further from the truth. But how do we get to success in online learning? How do we measure that success in this type of situation? I asked the question in committee. These teachers are sitting at home, teaching by themselves, students who are at their homes. How are the teachers observed? How are they supervised? How are they mentored? And yes, colleagues, we heard about successful students who have come through virtual charter schools. I have no doubt in my mind that there are students who have been successful in virtual charter schools. But to what do we attribute that success, colleagues? I ask the question, have you measured their success and their rate of success against students from a brick-and-mortar public school who had the same type of learning environment? Colleagues, these students, especially the young children, they have a one-on-one, full-time personal teacher. That's their parent. Of course they're successful. I don't question that. But we need to look at how much of our public dollars should be going to that type of learning environment. How do we measure that success? How much money does it take? As the carrier from District 19 stated, these are things that we need to look at. How do we best provide online learning? Yes, there is a place, Mr. President, for online learning. We need to stop. We need to have the moratorium, have this bill, and answer those very important questions about how do we get the success that children deserve, and that's why we need Senate Bill 767. I urge your aye vote. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you. Recognize Senator Dugwitz.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, all monopolies have a certain characteristics. They include high cost, poor service, lack of accountability, absence of innovation, and a morbid fear of competition. Our K-12 system is a monopoly in every sense of the word. Mr. President, this bill will do great harm. In my opinion, its only purpose is to preserve the K-12 monopoly, a monopoly that continues to fail our students. Virtual public charter schools are arguably the future of K-12 education in small rural communities across this state. These schools open the window of opportunity for students to access high-level education opportunities that otherwise are not and will not be provided in these small rural schools. Senate Bill 76B closes that window of opportunity. Mr. President, the hypocrisy of this bill is palpable. Section 8, sub 1, includes under sub A, a provision requiring academic achievement standards that must be met, and under sub B, a provision requiring performance criteria that must be met. Mr. President, the K-12 system would be summarily abolished if it were required to establish these achievement and performance standards. In 2007, Mr. President, 41% of the 18- and 19-year-old high school graduates from Oregon who applied for community colleges in Oregon required remedial education in order to do even attempt basic 101 courses, 41%. After the 2007 session, when we dumped $1 billion more into the K-12 system, in 2008, that same cohort, 49%, almost half, required remedial education in order to do basic community college 101 courses. Under sub F, a provision requiring that only licensed qualified teachers be allowed to teach in these schools. Mr. President, that eliminates the opportunity for advanced professionals, a professional such as Senator Telfer, to teach in one of these schools, to provide their knowledge to the students. it's much more important that the students would be denied the opportunity to learn from these very capable and learned people. In my opinion, this bill is designed to cripple and then destroy successful competition in the education field. I urge a no vote.
Thank you. Recognize Senator Bruce Starr.
Thank you, Mr. President. I stand in opposition to the bill. This is a bad bill. It's going to harm kids. But really, I wanted to stand up and correct something that I had said in my earlier remarks. I said in 1999 I drafted the first bill. It was actually 1993 when I was a staff person. My dad was in the State House of Representatives. So it was 1993 we introduced the first charter school bill, not 99. I wanted to correct that. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you. Recognize Senator Vicki Walker, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have a question of the carrier, please.
Would the carrier respond? Would the Senator Devlin respond to a question, please?
Yes.
Thank you. Senator, I'm on Ways and Means this session, really digging it. You know, it's a great deal of fun, and I'm thinking about money all the time now. So why isn't this bill in Ways and Means? It's got a fiscal, doesn't it?
The bill has a minimal fiscal, minimal revenue. The task force is being staffed by legislative staff.
All right. Mr. President, to the bill.
To the bill.
I don't really think we could absorb all that, but I've been finding this discussion so fascinating because it reminds me of my parents and their parents before them about rock and roll and Elvis Presley. And in my generation, to my children, that rap music, it's horrible. It'll corrupt your brain sort of thing. And that's been the conversation here. It's a little bit like that. We sometimes are afraid to embrace change and new ways of doing things. But I will tell you, I'm not happy with the State Board of Education because they punted this issue to us. They punted this issue, and I'm wondering where their responsibility lies here in trying to address this issue that has been before them for a great deal of time. I think we've wasted $4 million over at the Department of Ed on their virtual school website. It's stuff that you can just get off the internet yourself. It's $4 million. It went away into a dark hole. But colleagues, I want to also remind you that as we continue to underfund education because we fail to deal with tax reform and stability in our finances and government, we continue to lose teachers in the classroom. So what is a school to do? What is a school to do?
Thank you. Is there further discussion? Dr. Senator Hess, do you wish to close?
Thank you, Mr. President. I know that it is very difficult to resist, if you oppose this bill, the notion that it is shutting down virtual education. And I can just tell you that with my ties to education, I think those of you who know me know that if I thought that's what this would do, I would have nothing to do with this bill. From the very beginning when we started hearings on this bill, I insisted that we make it a very thoughtful and deliberative process. And I think this bill, with its numerous hearings in the Senate Education Committee and then in the Rules Committee, has been exposed to more scrutiny and discussion and hearings than any other piece of legislation before us in the Senate. And I'm proud of that. Anybody who wanted to weigh in on this bill has been able to do so, and hundreds of people did. And still, we cannot get our arms around all of the policy issues on virtual education. Right now, it is still, in Oregon at least, something of a wild frontier with a lot of unrestrained activity. Take the Scio School District, for example. It has become something of the Cayman Islands of virtual schools in Oregon. And I'm not sure that that's the wrong way to do that, but even people in SIO have said it at least points up the need for developing some kind of a systematic framework. This bill does give us a timeout to take even more time to study it and prescribe legislation. And if you don't want to call it a timeout, that's fine. Time. We just need some more time. We haven't been able to determine, for example, whether online learning is appropriate for grades 3 and below. We even heard testimony from online educators that maybe it's not. So what do? We have to be responsible about this. We have to tell parents what's the best way to go here. What about physical education in virtual schools? These are the things that we have to look for, and we will. The online education industry has exploded in just the last 2 years. and many states, including ours, are trying to get a feel for how this industry can interface with public education. I believe it can, but there has to be a framework in place to protect the integrity of the learning environment and to protect Oregon taxpayers, because their dollars are, in many cases, going to these private companies. Now, when I go into a school in Beaverton, I can find out how much the principal earns, I can find out how much the books cost, I can find out how much they paid for electricity last month. And I don't think it's unreasonable for Oregon taxpayers to ask for the same kind of accounting from companies providing education paid for by the public. Virtual schools do provide a valuable service to many kids in Oregon, and for some kids, it's the only way they're getting any education at all, and I understand that. In committee, they shared their stories and expressed gratitude for the opportunity to grow in an online school environment. And by the way, we heard from some kids where this didn't work out. For some, it just didn't work out. Right now, there's a lack of consistency in who can provide online learning and who can receive it. So I ask for your support today in this bill that will allow us to thoughtfully develop a statewide framework to ensure that quality online offerings are available for all students who will benefit from them. Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator Richard Devlin has demanded a call to the Senate, and he is joined by Senator Alan Bates and by Senator Laurie Montes Anderson. The doorkeepers will bar the doors, and the sergeant of arms will attend. The clerk, please call the roll.
Atkinson. Bates. Here. Bonamici. Boquist. Here. Burdick. Carter. Carter. Devlin. Dingfelder. Dingfelder. Ferrioli. George. Here. Girard. Hass. Johnson. Here. Cruz. Metzger. Montes Anderson. Monroe, Morissette, Morse, Nelson, Przonski, Rosenbaum, Schrader, Starr, Telfer, Berger, Walker, Whitsett, Winters, President Courtney.
Senator Carter is not here. What? All those subject to the call are now present. The question now arises upon a third reading, the final passage of Senate Bill 767. Those of the opinion the bill should pass will say aye. Those opposed, no. Would the clerk please call the roll?
Przonski. Rosenbaum. Schrader. Starr. Telfer. Berger. Walker. Walker. Whitsett. Whitsett. Winters. Atkinson. Bates. Bates. Bonamici. Boquist. Burdick. Carter, Devlin, Dingfelder, Ferrioli, George, Girard, Hass, Johnson, Cruz, Metzger, Montes Anderson, Monroe, Monroe, Morissette, Morse, Nelson, President Courtney.
Yes.
Voting no, Atkinson, Boquist, Ferrioli, George, Girard, Cruz, Morse, Nelson, Starr, Telfer, Berger, Walker, Whitsett, Winters. 16 ayes.
Senate Bill 767 has received a constitutional majority and is cleared to pass. Senator Richard Devlin.
Give me a second, Mr. President.
I understand we're going to have another bill after this. Is that right?
Yes, you do.
We will probably have
one more.
Senator Devlin has moved that House Bill 3405 and House Bill 2649 be made a special order of business at 4 p.m. today. I have just repeated the motion. Explain it. Mr. Senator Devlin, explain the motion I just made for you.
Thank you, Mr. President. With all my notes, I'm sure it's here. But the purpose of this is that we will consider these two measures this evening at 4 o'clock. My understanding from speaking to the Senate President is these are the only two measures that will be up at 4 o'clock. And I think everyone will be prepared for that debate.
Is there if there's no objection, we'll so, excuse me. Senator no, Ferrioli?
So there's no other schools to close today?
If there's no objection, it is so ordered. Recognize Senator Burdick. For what purpose do you rise?
I thought we were in announcements, Mr. President.
No, we're not under announcements. Okay. Recognize Senator Atkinson.
Announcements.
We're not under announcements. Without objection, the Senate will proceed to the order of third reading of House measures as so ordered. The clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 2589 with health benefit plan coverage of hearing aids.
Recognize Senator Walker. We're taking up a final bill, please. Senator Walker, would you please present the bill?
Thank you, Mr. President. Thank you, colleagues, for waiting. We've had some people waiting all morning for this bill. House Bill 2589 ensures hearing aid benefits for children covered by their parents' commercial insurance policy. This bill will assist children with hearing loss. For these children, a hearing aid can mean the difference between silence and the sound of a lullaby, a teacher's lesson, or a schoolmate's greeting. I love that sentence. It says it all. In Oregon, 1,290 children have unmet needs for hearing aids or hearing care. Hearing loss impacts a child's development, including speech, language, literacy, academic progress, and social-emotional development. We have a newborn infant hearing screening program in Oregon that I helped establish, but once a baby or child has been identified, the family that cannot afford treatment will not get treatment for their child. Nearly one-fifth of Oregon families of children with special health needs have experienced financial problems due to their inability to obtain those hearing aids for their children. Hearing aids cost between $1,000 and $5,000 each. Extraordinary out-of-pocket medical costs should not prevent families from providing hearing aids to their children. The Oregon Health Plan provides a benefit. Public Employees Benefit Board provides a benefit, but most of Oregon's children with private insurance have no hearing aid benefit, colleagues. This will bring our state closer to equitable coverage of hearing aids, and with the amendment offered by Ms. Sarah Leslie in committee, it will extend to children who are dependents on their parents' insurance policy while they're going to school. The cost to insurers is minimal. They did not testify against the bill. The impact on families whose children benefit from hearing aids is substantial. I urge your aye vote, colleagues. Thank you very much.
Recognize Senator Jason Atkinson.
I do not wish to speak. Thank you.
Recognize Senator Larry George. Are there further discussion of this measure? Question now arises upon a third reading and final passage of the House Bill 2589. All those opinion bills passed, say aye. Those opposed, no. Clerk, please call the roll.
Rosenbaum. Schrader. Starr. Telfer. Berger. Berger, Walker, Whitsett, Winters, Atkinson, Bates, Bonamici, Boquist, Burdick, Carter, Devlin, Dingfelder, Ferrioli, George, Girard, Haas, Johnson, Cruz, Metzger, Montes Anderson, Monroe, Morissette, Morse, Nelson, Przonski, President Courtney.
Yes.
Voting no, Atkinson, Ferrioli, George, Girard, Cruz, Morse, Nelson, Starr, Whitsett. 21 ayes.
House Bill 2589, having received constitutional majority, declared passed. Senate will recess until 4 p.m.